This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
Welcome to the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1. My name is Raymond Grenfell, joining you until 12 noon this afternoon. First up, though, before we go any further, huge thanks to Jeff. It's good to be back in the studio, following on from the man with the chops, the moustache. No, he's shaking his head. He's not. No. I don't know what he's doing. But yeah, always a pleasure to follow on from Jeff. Anyway. Giving you On the Record every Monday morning. But of course, On the Record will be back tomorrow from 9 in the AM. And yeah, you can keep it locked, of course, throughout the week. But as I said, this is the Indie Media Show. That's news and interviews from the open publishing wires of the interwebs. On today's show, we're going to be focusing on a couple of very important issues. One that is very local, but you know, very incredibly important, and not just local, really. It's very much an issue that faces all of us here in Australia, and that is, of course, talking about Cassius Turvey. There were huge demonstrations and vigils throughout the week and on the weekend throughout the country in Australia, where people gathered to mourn the tragic death of Cassius, and to really bring attention to the ongoing injustice and racism that still exists in this country. Indie Media's Zoe Tiro was at the rally in Perth, and we're going to be hearing from a whole bunch of voices from people who participated from the First Nations community, and of course many people who came out in solidarity with First Nations people. So we'll be hearing that a little later in the show. We're also going to be doing a bit of a deep dive into the ongoing conflict and impacts of colonization in Ethiopia. Now, it's something that unfortunately many of us don't know much about, and that's largely due to a very often biased reporting in the Western media, and not just in contemporary times, but historically. I think it'd be safe to say that many people, perhaps many of you listening, know very little about the history and the very tragic history of Ethiopia, from the Mussolini's invasion in the 1930s to the ongoing so-called civil war and the military junta, and just a lot of the tragedies that have befallen the people of Ethiopia. But a little later in the show, we're going to be catching up with a couple of people that know it very, very well, and really looking into some of the, I guess, contemporary issues and the historical context. There's been a lot of obviously emotion and difficulty for many people in the community, of course, in our Indigenous brothers and sisters, but also an incredible show of solidarity, strength, love, and really calls for unity in such a tragic time. Indie Media's Zoe Tiro was at the rally in Perth on Wednesday to speak to some of the people attending and to hear their stories.
I'd like to introduce the beautiful, inspiring, strong mother that we've watched over the past couple of weeks tell her story. So I'd like to introduce Michelle Turvey to the stage, so if you just can all make her feel really welcome on her young faces.
My boy talks to me every day through my heart and tells me what I need to do. For some reason, he told me to find his first year school report. And I guess it sums up that he died a leader. He will have followers, but I want you to all know how young it started. And I might not have seen that at all times, but my goodness, I get it. Cassie's attended the Murichnunga Community College, so as I said, this is his first report. Cassie's has made very pleasing progress across all learning areas. He is a helpful, considerate and enthusiastic class member who always enjoys being challenged. He has demonstrated very good understanding of many topics covered this year and has begun to work to a high standard of presentation of his written, oral and illustrated work. This demonstrates his willingness and self-motivation to succeed. Cassius takes pride in his work and often contributes to his peers' successes with a positive attitude. Cassius has been a pleasure to teach, and I've had that pleasure of teaching him. So has his father. So has his brothers. His grandmother. His grandfather, rest in peace, old Bob. All families. All his friends. He was taught well. That's it for me.
Since Cassius's attack, it has put fear into myself as a parent with young children. Our family has been torn apart from losing our big baby. He was truly a beautiful old soul. I replay his unique laugh in my head. It was such a goofy laugh, and you could hear it when he was at home. My babies desperately miss their Uncle Cassie each and every day. They keep saying to me, "Mummy, is Uncle Cassie feeling better? Can we pick him up now? Can we bring him home?" My heart breaks for them, knowing that in 7 weeks will be Christmas and he will not be here with us. Our family is not only shattered, but we are broken with a feeling of emptiness in our family. While we march the streets of Boorloo, I want you to all remember that we are not violent people. This is not a violent rally. This is a rally to seek justice for Cassius. May we call upon our ancestors to give us strength and to show Australia today that we as a country need change for all of our children.
The very fabric of society has been broken and torn apart, and the very journey in which we need to be as a community and as a people and as a nation is being threatened. And for me, standing and coming here today, I look out and I see all the faces that are all in unison, that are understanding what's been happening here, not just in this beautiful city of Perth, but right across this country and indeed all around the world. That we as a nation are standing at a crossroad. And it's, what steps do we take next? And what is the next initiative that we are going to do in relation to a new story for this country, in which we need to say, what is the way forward for a united and committed and an Australia that is moving together? And I'm reminded of the words of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, who made a comment when he said that darkness cannot drive out darkness, only light can do that. And hate cannot drive out hate, only love can do that. And today it's the love of this young man that's drawn everyone together in a response that's been truly overwhelming. This is about love, not about hate. Today love conquers. So when I say to you, Cassius Turvying Arurule, what do you say? Beautiful. Oh, Cassius Turvey, Arurule! Thank you, Fakira! Ahantu Mate, Mate Kora! Ahantu Mate, Mate Kora! Ahantu Mate, Mate Kora!
words for the loss of young one. There are no words. It was an abomination. That word is not strong enough for the harrow, a mother's loss, an injustice. It's beyond a tragedy. It's the end of a world. And I feel the harrow as a father, as a parent, that anyone would have for their children. We weren't put on this earth to bury our children before our time. We weren't put on this earth for that. We can change this nation's story. Much of it is changing, but not at the rapid pace that it should. Our constitution is still racialized. It is still scribbled with racism and white Australia policy directives. Section 121, 122, section 50 and 51 still haven't been deleted from the Australian constitution that racialize our constitution, scribbled together during a time of apartheid and eugenics. We need the voices of Michelle, because what took young one's life? He was in the right place at the right time, in his school uniform, on his way home, on his way to a future of leadership, of potential leadership, of a life that had overwhelmed the challenges his parents had gone through. My heart breaks and aches, as all of your hearts break and ache because they come together. But all of you must make this individual Australian of the Year. She should be in our parliament as a leading voice, but as Australian of the Year, as Fiona Stanley was, in legacy to Cassius, who was denied the future and the opportunity, the life that he should have had.
Cassius Turvey, a proud Noongar Namaji 15-year-old boy, had a bright future ahead of him. He was described as a gentle giant, a vibrant, caring jokester, and a bright and humble boy. He brought joy to many of his friends and local community. He was a beautiful young man with a bright future cut short. The Western Australian Police Commissioner has urged people not to jump to any conclusions of racism and that it was a case of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. He has since apologised for those words. We know that these kinds of victim-blaming comments are hateful but not uncommon to the many Aboriginal people who've been let down by the justice system and who experience perpetual grief of race-related violence. We share the outrage and acknowledge the re-traumatisation felt by Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander families and communities right across Australia. We sent a message out from our university, and we know that most people are outraged and grieving about what happened. We said in that message that all Australians have a role to play in fighting injustice, that we live in a society that's built on Western colonial values, and those systems continue to uphold those values. The message said that white peoples who benefit from a system that privileges them must work alongside Indigenous people to make governments accountable for their actions and to uphold and protect the human rights of the First Nation peoples of this nation.
I had the absolute privilege to know Cassius through an art program run by my nan and Swan Vicino High School. I remember the moment he walked into the room, up with his goofy smile on his face, and he went straight to work. He didn't have to be asked twice. When he made a little mistake, he just looked up at me and smiled as if he were asking me to cover it up, so I did, because how could you say no to him? He was such a well-mannered and respectful kid to everyone, no matter who you were. Our community has really lost such a beautiful soul. We were talking about Cassius yesterday, and Anne was saying how he was always so happy and smiling, and how he would always, without fail, say good morning and goodbye to my nan and the bus driver. Words cannot describe the hurt we have all felt finding out about this tragedy. The energy at Swan Vicino Senior High School has shifted in the past week. Students and teachers have come together to celebrate the life and mourn the death of Cassius. Teachers have printed out flyers for the community barbecue and vigil and have made these t-shirts with his face and the saying "Kids Matter" on it. Cassius Turvey's death was felt by everyone, doesn't matter if you knew him or not. So Australia, we now need to stand up. How do we keep letting this happen? When will enough be enough?
The The life of a child is sacred. The death of a child is a tragedy. This child was not born with a risk to die, but with a promise to live and lead an outstanding life. He may have been another Martin Luther King, sharing with us his dream for a future of equal opportunity and chances. He may have been another Archie Roach, or an Adam Goods, or a male Donald Wallum, making a stand for justice and against racism. He would have been a wonderful father to the next generation of Turvey kids, participating in the workforce and working to better himself and help others as well. He will never be these things because he is dead. Murdered at 15, walking home from school. He was doing the right thing at the right time. His murderer was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he did the wrong thing. What does justice for Cassius look like? It looks like justice for every Aboriginal Kulunga kid. It's about our leaders acknowledging that racism exists across Australia in all aspects of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lives. Whilst this case is before the courts, we hesitate to publicly call this death a racially motivated deed. However, it is clear that racism is endemic in Australia. We see it in health and police systems, the Miss Do case, for example, in justice, Banksia and Casuarina, in education, child protection. Michelle, you want us to help all kids, but we want our leaders and those with power and influence to put in place environments where Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids have the same or better chances than other Australian kids.
My heart goes out to all of the people in Midland because the community has lost a child. All of Western Australia has lost a child. Multicultural Western Australia has lost a child. Forget about the racism. We need to start getting over the racism. The racism, this country was built on racism, we know. But as a people and moving forward, we need to get over it and build a bridge and start coming together with love for all.
Everybody in big loud voice, Forever 15. Forever 15.
You know, we need to understand that since colonialism, racism has never gone away. It's just entrenched in government systems and the mindsets of some people in society. And it's only through unity that we can walk together as one to educate our future generations so that they don't grow up with that colonial mindset and understand that we all walk together and as one as this, in this country, and Aboriginal people should be embraced as the oldest living cultural people in the whole entire world.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
And you're on the Indie Media Show on RTR FM 92.1. My name is Raymond Grenfell. Brahma's in the studio as well, trying to keep up the positive vibes on the program. Now, we're going to turn to the ongoing conflict and stories within Ethiopia. And look, before we even get started, to be honest, it is a subject, the history and the ongoing conflicts in Ethiopia is a subject we could dedicate not just one show, but many shows on, because unfortunately, I would say that many of you, and you know, myself included, and many people in Australia, just are not aware of the history of struggles that the Ethiopian people have experienced. But in an attempt to remedy that, I had the opportunity to speak to Mesfin Tadisi, who's an Amhara Ethiopian man, and also Janet Bastian. And I guess I was specifically talking to them because there's been, the ongoing so-called civil war, or the Tigray War. It's the armed conflict that began on the 3rd of November 2020. But of course, it could be said that it began a lot earlier with the history of foreign intervention and colonization in the country. But there has been this ongoing conflict between the Tigray People's Liberation Front and government forces. And I guess to begin things, I started by asking Jeanette exactly how this initial conflict in November 2020 began.
So, Dr. Abiy Ahmed Ali the Prime Minister was virtually asked to come to power, to take over, because the TPLF had been in power for 27 years. The leader was very old and tired, and he took over March, April 2018. From the moment he took over, he endured assassination attempts. You know, there were van loads brought in by NGOs and through embassies from Europe of weapons. A coup was attempted. The young soldiers were funded with, you know, with English pounds. So continual fomenting of unrest because a good leader was in power and he refused to be a puppet. While we were there in 2020, there were some riots that Europeans paid Ethiopians to actually perform. So about 400 people were killed. You know, a popular singer was assassinated, a mayor was assassinated. It was the aim was to make it look like ethnic division, which is the colonialist game. And by the way, Ethiopia has never been colonised, with Liberia. They're the only two countries never colonised in the whole of Africa. But that's the mentality, that post-colonialist mentality dominates, and it still is, divide and rule. So these riots happened. Outside our hotel, there was a mound of machetes left, possibly poisoned on the blade. Ethiopians were supposed to pick them up and have Rwanda Mark II. No one touched them. The city council came and picked them up. They were left all around the capital, Addis Ababa, with its population of nearly 7 million. The riots did destroy the major industrial area of Ethiopia called Cheshemania, full of geniuses. It destroyed schools, hospitals, industry, libraries. Somali mercenaries in trucks ran over pregnant Jewish women. Mm-hmm. So Muslims surrounded synagogues or monasteries, and Jews surrounded mosques to prevent further destruction. Mm. You know, formed human bodyguards. This happened around the main, the biggest monastery in the city, which is St. George's. People protected that. Could have been a lot worse, but Ethiopians don't want to fight. They want peace. This didn't work. There was Trump saying, damn the bomb, you know, the grand Ethiopian Renaissance dam on the Nile River, the Blue Nile River, about 200 kilometres in from the west border with Sudan. So there were attempts, there were continual attempts to destroy that, because you know, Africa mustn't have anything good. Egypt made a lot of noise. Oh, we won't have enough water. They have about 89%, because the English arranged that for most of the last century, and hey, it will have water. And because of the dam, Sudan is not flooded, with 250,000 people at least displaced every winter. You know, with the heavy rains, with their governments, both Sudan's governments, not helping them. So it's a good thing for the Horn of Africa, and it's a really good thing for Ethiopia, and the people need that hydroelectricity, because most in rural areas are still without it. So that was an excuse to come down on Ethiopia and put more sanctions on. So that happened all through that year.
Sorry, Jana, I wanted to ask about the sanctions in a second, but I just going back to a point that you raised earlier in terms of, you know, I guess sort of Western influence, and you know, and many countries in Europe and the UK and the US, you know, really, whether directly or indirectly supporting and backing the TPLF, how can this be justified? Of course, you know, any of our listeners to the program would be, of course, familiar with the West backing despotic regimes and juntas for their own reasons and imperial sort of purposes. But what is the crux of the reasoning here? Why is there so much interest in Ethiopia from foreign powers, and why are they backing this this force?
Okay, so Ethiopia has a population of almost 120 million in Ethiopia itself. Could be 114 million, some say 120 million. It's strategically well located for the Middle East and for the whole of Africa, being there in the east of Africa, in the Horn of Africa. With Emperor Haile Selassie I, back in the 1960s, was Pan-African. He assisted people in many countries, you know, shake off colonialism, supported them afterwards when they were left for dead with nothing, you know, by the exiting, usually the English. And he helped form the what is now the African Union. So Ethiopia still is Pan-African, except when it has a terrible weak government like the TPLF from 1991 to 2018, which is a puppet government. So in the last five years, France has bombed and killed about 100,000 Africans in different countries, former colonies. It assassinated the good leader in Guinea, put in its own puppet. This is just what Europeans do because they want the strategical benefit. They don't want China to get control, through its enterprise. They don't want Russia to think of, you know, controlling Africa. There are strong mining interests. Australia has big ones in Ethiopia. After the atrocities in November, when 70,000 Amhara, mainly Jews, mainly farmers, were buried alive, run over by trucks, men, women, children, pregnant women, babies, elderly, in Tigray, because Tigray has a lot of Amhara, because the TPLF made sure that it got a lot of their lands. People mixed together voluntarily in Ethiopia. After that, the government had a whole lot of terrible war criminals that wanted, a wanted list. Well, the Australian government from Khartoum in the Republic of Sudan, North Sudan, flew out about 27 of those war criminals to Australia. They were, you know, citizens, and 200 kilos of Ethiopian gold. So Australia has big mining interests in Eritrea and Ethiopia, and it is making all these noises in support of the UN with sanctions. I think also Australia is trying to gain more power for itself in the UN and please the big, you know, the big leaders. The Ethiopian embassy is closed in, all but closed in Canberra, and in Ethiopia, the Australian embassy is completely useless. It was very rude to a stranded Eritrean woman on her own, sleeping rough, when Emirates cancelled her flight home to Tasmania, made her sit across the road, wouldn't let her near the embassy, spoke roughly in Tigrinya to her. And they were appalling towards Mesfin and I, who were stranded for a total of 14 and a half months.
And I guess if we can now go back a little bit, I mean, many of our listeners, perhaps they're aware of Ethiopia in terms of some contemporary history and perhaps what they see on the news. But unfortunately, many people don't know the sort of the history of colonization. And I guess, in particular, the Mussolini's invasion of Ethiopia in 1935 and the ramifications that had. Mesfin, obviously you have a very personal connection to these stories and the history of Ethiopia itself. I mean, in your mind, do you think these events, Mussolini's invasion and also the incredibly courageous resistance to that invasion, do you think that they really hugely impacted on, you know, everything that sort of followed in Ethiopia and the sort of, I guess, the history now of colonization and interference and war that unfortunately has become the reality for Ethiopian people?
Yeah. I'll give you to Mesfin. My perspective is the world wants Ethiopia, not Ethiopians. Mm. They have so much to offer. I'll hand you over.
Thank you. Look, this Western interference from the beginning the first time European colonialists defeated by Ethiopians. That defeat we called it the Battle of Adwa. After 45 years, they came back again, the Europeans, especially Italy, Britain, and France, to expanded colonialism in Africa. So they defeated. Still, they have revenge. To be honest, I have to tell you the truth. This is revenge. To destroy it, they try to make Ethiopia five small, weak country. They try in my lifetime. I served for Ethiopian Special Force, and I was also anti-hijacker in the army and air marshal. So what we have seen, fully hate. They don't want the big Ethiopia to survive there. That's why they try the past 20 years, they cut Ethiopia into pieces. One become a country called Eritrea. It was Ethiopia in my age. That country was one Ethiopia. Now Ethiopia comes through. What is the project having with this trumpet TPLF to make Ethiopia five small pieces? And the deduction of also between 7 to 10 million people. So that's why they are sending the flame, not the food, by the name of NGO, non-governmental organization. All of them, they are mercenary. They have bad message to the society. They stop Ethiopian farmer not to do a farm. They make them a food handout to live. So that's not the culture of Ethiopians. So the past 16 months, when they were stuck there, we have seen even Ethiopian traditional herbal medicine maker, the Americans involving. And they stop them. They sabotage their I'm telling you, you cannot find those herbal trees anywhere on earth. They make it to be burned. This is sabotage. You see, they make Ethiopians to rely on the Western weapons, the Western drug. They don't need us to Ethiopians to make their own herbal medicine. So this is what I have seen. So this is indirect colonialism. You see now, they can't do it like a Second World War time. They can't do it like the previous time. But the indirect colonialism, French, west part of Africa, east, the English, and south, German, Dutch, all this problem, still there. That's why the Ethiopians, every day, they are dying to cross the Mediterranean Sea. Hundred of them. Never been told. That's why I said to you, I feel shame by Australian media. They never, ever bring a single person when Ethiopia, they are dying mass grave. Hundred thousands. They never bring it for 1 second. That they are not human beings. This media is really, really media. Can I accept this kind of journalism or humanity? What is United Nations? United Nations is, it's a forged Western brokers. It's not, I'm telling you, my younger brother, he was serving for UN peacekeeping in Zaire. What he was been doing, he's telling me, he rang me, no, I'm not keeping the children and peacekeeping here. We're watching the mining and the gorilla. Because one gorilla, they're selling it up to $500,000 for the European zoo and for Chinese. You see, human beings in Africa, they are less than gorilla. So my brother was being, he died anyway, but he served in bad way. My father also served in Korea 2 times. You see, so we have very disciplined military peacekeeping in the world, but now they try to destroy Ethiopia. I'm really thank you very much to hear me this.
No.
I will keep telling United Nations. I've been working in United Nations in Kenya and Somalia. It is a criminal company.
Mm.
It's a mercenary company. UN, UNICEF, all those. The many people I see in New Zealand, people, everyone have got a big jar. They put it on top of the fridge. All those money, they put it there.
Mm.
And they send it for Oxfam, UNICEF. That money did not reach one cent, but they use the starved children picture. They bring in the TV to get the money. What they are doing there? Spying. And spreading. And how to get... In here, I used to work in the mining. I never see anyone being paid $2 per day. In Eritrea, Australia company paid 40 naqfa, means less than $1 for the mining working a day, not per hour.
It's
up to $65 per hour. But imagine the other side, Australia, and how much they are paid. Australia embassy, they treat me like a second citizen.
Mm.
Why? That is by our taxpayer money.
Mm.
The embassy set up in Ethiopia. But even they not let you in.
It's absolutely criminal, Mesfin. And I mean, what you're saying there is essentially, if we're to look at it honestly, you know, the United Nations, who of course have a lot of blood on their hands in Africa, but the United Nations are clearly not helping the Ethiopian people. When you have you know, so many foreign countries and corporations who are there just to exploit the resources and exploit the Ethiopian people, I guess it's very difficult for us to know what we can do and what perhaps Ethiopian people can do. And I guess I just wanted to, you know, unfortunately this is something we could talk about for hours and hours, but I guess I just wanted to finish by asking you both what you think people can do. I mean, this is, you know, I guess the first start is for people to educate themselves on what's really going on. But outside of that, what can people do to express and show solidarity to Ethiopian people when they're up against so much, when they're up against, you know, so many foreign powers, against the United Nations, against, you know, foreign corporations that are clearly just there to exploit them and continue this this horrible situation? What can people do to really express solidarity with the people who are suffering?
May I answer? That's a wonderful question, Ray. Ed Mesfin has an idea, but I just want to say that they need to get Anthony Albanese to eat his words, to apologise to Ethiopia's leaders. In the UN, he was going, yes, you know, there should be, you know, enforced ceasefire, you know, in square brackets, with terrorists being the TPLF and sanctions. He has never, to my knowledge, spoken to any of the leaders of Ethiopia, let alone the Prime Minister, who speaks excellent English. So I think people should write many short letters to Anthony Albanese and to Penny Wong and demand that they hear the side of the Ethiopian government, that they respect the Ethiopian government that was elected in 2021, came to power in 2018, and stop supporting foreign interference that's incredibly criminal and dangerous. In Djibouti and Somalia last month, the Ethiopian Defence Forces discovered 500 million euros worth of weapons supplied by Europeans to Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab was at that stage attacking Ethiopia. They'll do anything, support anybody to attack Ethiopia. So call them out. Stop running after the big powers just like some pathetic little brother. Get a brain of their own. So I think if everybody writes with just one or two requests, a short letter, that's going to have a lot more of an impact than one person like me writing a blog. So just write a letter. It will cost you $1.10 for the postage stamp that you can email as well. but I think posting has a bit more impact. Please do it.
That was Jeanette Bastien. Also, we were speaking to Mesfin Tedesi, who is an Amhar Ethiopian man. And look, it's a subject that we really could dedicate the entire show to and many other shows, but we'll have an extended version of that interview available on our SoundCloud for you to listen to, and highly recommend you do it. But if you want to read more and learn more about the situation, Jeanette has a website where they share a blog, and it's IANET, so Ianet, Bastien. at .com. So that's IANETBASTYAN.com. But we will share those details online on our social media and so forth, so you can find out more information. And I guess just to update those who listened to the interview, of course, you may have read that representatives of Ethiopia's government have reached a deal to halt hostilities against the Tigray Liberation Army. This was a peace deal that was announced last Wednesday, what capped off African Union mediated talks in South Africa aimed at bringing an end to the war, in which there are estimates of at least 800,000 people who have died as a result of this ongoing conflict. But of course, there, as Jeanette and Mesfin were saying, it's perhaps not so so simple, and you know, there's a lot of influence, especially from the West, ongoing. So it's definitely worth educating yourself on it. And yeah, as I said, we'll upload a much more extended version of that interview to our SoundCloud later today.
You're listening to the Indie Media Podcast, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.
This is the Indie Media Show on RTRFM 92.1. I'm going to go to a bit of Indie Media news now. Egyptian authorities have arrested hundreds in a crackdown on dissenting voices ahead of the COP27, the UN climate conference, which started on Sunday in Sharm el-Sheikh. 15 Nobel laureates have signed an open letter asking world leaders to pressure Egypt into releasing its many political prisoners, including human rights activist Al-Abda el-Fattah. And the English, Egyptian, British writer, philosopher and political prisoner Al-Abda el-Fattah is also poised to escalate his hunger strike into a water strike now that the COP27 climate summit is underway. Abda el-Fattah has already been on a hunger strike for more than 200 days to demand his freedom after he was jailed over much of the last 9 years for his role in the 2011 revolution that ousted Egypt's longtime dictator Mubarak. Alal's sister, Monef Sif, spoke from London on Thursday, expressing her solidarity and sympathy and saying that they're greatly concerned that for his life if he continues his water strike. And in Brazil, defeated far-right President Bolsonaro made his first public statements on Tuesday, 2 days after he lost the presidential election to leftist former president Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. Bolsonaro neither conceded nor contested the election results, but after he spoke, his chief of staff said the transition to a new administration would start. Bolsonaro also urged his supporters to stop disruptive protests, though many continue to block streets and major highways. In Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu has become prime minister for a third time, 16 months after he was ousted from office amid a series of corruption scandals. Results from Tuesday's election show that Netanyahu's Likud party and its far-right allies won 64 seats in the Knesset, enough to form a parliamentary majority. A key member of Netanyahu's government will likely be Itamar Ben-Gvir, an ultra-nationalist lawmaker who openly supports the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. This comes as Israel's security forces killed 4 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem last Thursday, while Israeli fighter jets bombed the Gaza Strip. Israeli forces have killed at least 130 Palestinians in the West Bank this year. And in Pakistan, former Prime Minister Imran Khan is in a stable condition after he was shot in the leg last Thursday at a rally in Wazirabad. One person was killed and at least 10 others injured in the apparent assassination attempt. Khan has accused top government officials, including the Prime Minister, of being behind the attack. And in the US, billionaire Elon Musk has met with over half a dozen civil rights groups amid concerns the new owner of Twitter will let misinformation and hate speech go unchecked. Media Matters, Free Press, and dozens more groups urge Twitter's top advertisers to remove their ads from the platform if proper safety standards are not imposed. Meanwhile, Musk is reportedly firing thousands of employees, about half of Twitter's workforce, and requiring remaining employees to return to on-site work. Some Twitter employees filed a class action lawsuit alleging that the firings are unlawful. This is the final seconds, moments of the Indie Media Show. Hope you've enjoyed the program. We'll be back next week at 11 a.m. on a Monday. If you'd like to restream the show, you can do so at rtrfm.com.au. You can also get our show as a podcast, or you can listen to our various interviews on our SoundCloud and get in touch with us either through RTRFM, or you can head along to our social media platforms and contact us through there. Always like to hear from you if you've got any ideas for stories or questions or just some feedback. Really appreciate it.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?